Blog Talk Radio.
Yakuza Kick Radio.
Anyone listening, knock, knock. Listen, this is Sammy Callahan, and you're listening to him on Yakuza Kick Radio. You better all listen.
Yakuza Kick Radio. Well, this is Mr. Insanity Toby Fine, and if you're not listening to Yakuza Kick Radio, then you're weird. Boom.
All you had to do was listen to Yakuza Kick Radio, but you didn't. Now look at that guy, you homie. Fuck that. Black D. Holla.
My name is Justice Payne, and you are listening to Yakuza Kick Radio.
And you are listening to Yakuza Kick Radio, the best in internet wrestling radio, period, bar none, just like Adam Cole.
Yakuza Radio, love the name, Yakuza.
Yakuza Kick Radio has risen from the ashes of bad internet radio and become the premier place for any independent professional wrestler to stop and record their voice.
J-Cat and fucking Eric Lawrence cannot fucking keep this from the public, that they are fucking dyed-in-the-wool, true blue fucking members of fucking Cult Fiction, and motherfuckers need to keep that shit in fucking mind.
But you go to the back, and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town. That's Yakuza Kick Radio, and we're taking over.
J-Cat Morris and Eric Williams, your hosts of Yakuza Kick Radio. Yakuza Kick Radio.
Yakuza Kick Radio. It is Thursday, July 28th. Welcome to Yakuza Kick Radio. I'm your host, J-Cat Morris, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Eric Williams. What's going on, Eric?
Hey, J-Cat, how is things going on your end of the spectrum?
Could be better. Kind of a pain in the ass day today. My computer's been fucked up all week. I haven't even really been able to promote this show. I could pretty much only read text on my computer. It looks like an Atari right now. So hopefully within the next couple of days, I'll be all good. For now, I'm just making do with it. But anyway. You know, for those who don't know, mostly promoted by our guest himself, I got to thank him for that. Our guest tonight is the main event, Justin Maine. And, you know, he's a guy that a lot of people might not know the name of, but we're going to do our best to try to make his name a little more familiar with some of the people out there. So, if you'd like to screen that call, Eric, we'll get right to it. More or less, got some stuff to talk about. Football's back, obviously some indie stuff, and, yeah, a little bit of WWE.
Great WWE fucking Raw. Monday Night Raw was fucking phenomenal. It was phenomenal shitty up until, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, Jake had a, real quick, are you ready for another fun, exciting show of Yakuza Kick Radio? Because I am.
All right, dude.
All right. Yeah, our guest is on hold, so.
Okay, without further ado, I'd like to introduce to you our guest for this evening, and that is the main event, Justin Maine. What's going on, man?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you guys?
Cool, man. Yeah, we figured we'd bring you on, you know, get to know a little bit more about you, talk some wrestling.
Sounds good. That's what I like to do.
Cool. We'll start off with, you know, a little bit of background about yourself.
My name is Justin, obviously. I started wrestling about, I want to say, 2007, 2008, but I didn't really start full-time until 2008. I was originally trained by the mastermind Dave DuPont here in Michigan, and then later retrained by Richie Boy Briar Wellington.
Okay. Now, how long did, you train before you, actually started getting in the ring and, working shows and that type of thing?
I believe closer to 7-8 months. I would think I would have matches here and there. When I originally trained, I had kind of like the old school upbringing. Like, you just kind of learn from the veterans, and then you get in the ring. You basically listen and learn and just talk with whoever's in the ring, and then, apply it, and then just, learn from the future. When I got retrained by Briar was when I, fully got, the ins and outs of the business. But originally when I started working around, it was more of like an old school kind of training session.
All right. Before you actually made the decision to get into wrestling, what were some of your inspirations and, reasons that you actually made the move and got into it?
I originally started watching during the whole WCW, WWF feud going on, as pretty much everybody else around my age. But I was more of like a WCW kind of fan, and what instantly hooked me was the whole Sting NWO angle.
Right.
I remember the very first time I actually saw wrestling on TV was I saw that I forget which episode it was, but it was like the Sting segment where he was beating up NWO, like everybody in the NWO, and I thought that was the most insane fucking thing I had ever seen in my life up till that point.
Right.
I just you never saw that when you were a kid. You never saw like some painted up guy just beating the crap out of people. I thought the guy was a superhero back then. So that instantly hooked me from then on. And what actually made me want to get into the business to be a wrestler, to be a quote unquote sports entertainer, as some people like to call it, was when I went to the 2005 Survivor Series in Detroit. And I remember the last man standing match between Ric Flair and Triple H when they brawled into the crowd. I was sitting fifth row, and I'd never been that close to wrestling up until that point. Like, it was right in front of me, and that was amazing. I was still a fan at that point, but, I watched it. I'm like, oh, my God, this is insane. This is the coolest thing, ever. Like, this is totally beats the Sting versus NWO. But when they were brawling past me and my friend Andrew, who was with me there, they brawled past us, and then they brawled right back to us. So it was kind of like, I don't know if you know the Joe Louis Arena that well, but there's like this back barricade after the floor seat. So they're coming back from the back barricade, and I went to go grab my camera because I completely forgot that I had a camera there. So I go to grab my camera, turn it on, turn back around, and then bam, I get blasted back into 5 seats behind me. I didn't know how the hell it happened. I saw fans were rushing up and kind of pushing around, just trying to get up close to them. But when I turned back around to look at who knocked me over, it was Triple H standing right in front of me. And it was I wasn't that as height wise and weight wise, it wasn't as big as I am now. But back then it was kind of this big hulking guy against this twiggy, skinny, scrawny little kid. And I'm just looking up at him. I'm like, holy shit. I just got knocked over by Triple H. And then I blink for a second, and then Ric Flair is standing right in front of me, probably the most respected veteran in the business is standing right there. And I processed it in my head. I'm like, wow, I need to do this for a living. I want to be able to do that for somebody else, give them that kind of moment, that kind of memory, and give them that inspiration to want to be a wrestler. I want to do that for some kid someday.
So how many fans have you knocked over since then?
probably 4,000, 5,000, 6,000. I hate fans. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
No, that's
cool. That's a good story, man.
Thank you.
yeah, I mean, You know, figure start out getting knocked over by Triple H and seeing Ric Flair right in front of you is probably a good inspiration to start with for sure.
I would have to agree. That's why it worked.
Yeah. Who were some of the guys, you know, when you decided to go into training and stuff that you were like, you know, this is the type of thing I want to model myself after. I'd love to be that type of wrestler.
Probably the biggest guy in the business right now, CM Punk, for sure. CM Punk was probably my biggest, not so much gimmick, but like just the way he portrays himself. Like,
right.
you know, it's kind of like a gimmick, but it's not a gimmick. It's who he actually is. And that's how I wanted to portray myself, you know, reality, but up to the nth degree, basically.
And right.
CM Punk was just in the ring, on the mic, moveset wise, just the way he's told a story in the ring. I thought he was, even back then, I thought he was on top of the game, at least in the indie world. I thought he was by far, I knew he was going to be going places as soon as I started watching him. So he was, he was a big inspiration when I first started out.
Yeah, I mean, I got to agree. I mean, CM Punk is phenomenal. What he's doing now, I never imagined, even though I knew, you know, he was one of those top guys in the indies. I was watching him in Ring of Honor. And the series of matches, the feud that he did with Raven was just, I mean, classic.
Definitely. And that's actually when I started watching him. Like, there at IWA Mid-South were the two promotions I really saw him in, but the ROH feud with Raven was what really drew me into CM Punk and his whole persona, basically.
Yeah. I've never been a huge Raven fan other than, I mean, back in the WCW thing, he had a, you know, good thing going, and ECW obviously, you know, was really his prime, but I don't know, through the years, like, some of the overused ECW names have just kind of just lost wind with me, and it actually, like, showed that Raven could still be a face in the business when he got in the ring with CM Punk, because he just made it work.
Oh, yeah. Like, the best thing about that feud to me was the fact that I hate it when there's clear-cut baby faces and clear-cut heels. I think there should be, not like a huge gray area, but there should be enough of a gray area to be like, wow, well, if the bad guy is, you know, saying something that makes sense, you know, it makes sense to me. Yeah, I can see why he's angry over what he's doing. And the same thing with the baby face. I don't, like, you shouldn't just follow somebody because they're a good guy. They have to have a reason to be good. And with that whole feud, what I really liked about it was that there was honesty to both sides. You know, Raven wasn't clear-cut the good guy, and CM Punk wasn't clear-cut the bad guy. Like, they both had their reasons for hating each other. And you could believe both. And I don't, for kind of like an indie feud, because ROH was mostly an indie at that time, I thought it was just this really in-depth storyline that I think would, even if it was on like a national stage, it would have caught on real quick.
Yeah, it was really, really good the way they pulled that off. It was shocking to me. I was actually there live for a few of their matches, and it was awesome stuff.
Oh, yeah, you're lucky then. I wish I could have went to some of those matches, especially the, I believe it was the dog collar match that I remember watching it on video, and I was so insanely jealous of people that were there watching that live, because I could just imagine the buzz going on in the crowd and in the arena, even backstage. I could imagine what that was like, because it was brutal.
Yeah, that was one of them. I believe that one was in Elizabeth, and I was definitely there. Yeah.
So lucky.
Yeah, no, I'm very fortunate to be, you know, the East Coast is really blessed with the amount of talent we get to, you know, see pass through. And, I mean, I have signed programs and, like, the names on you see your Samoa Joe, your Low Keys, your CM Punk, Homicide, like, all the guys on one thing. That's just one show. I mean, it's incredible what you actually get to see pass through. So, yeah, I'm fortunate to be pretty much where I am. But
oh, yeah, for sure. I love how, like, the East Coast is also, like, basically the jumping ground for a lot of wrestlers and, like, to start out. It's not so much like that in the Midwest. There's, you know, sparsely places around, you know, Chicago and Michigan and Ohio
but you see a lot of the national indie stars coming from the East Coast. Guys like, you know, like CM Punk back in the day, or Low Key, or like Jay Lethal when they first started out. And now they're, you know, they were on national television, or still are. And now you see guys like Rich Swann or Sammy Callahan that are really starting to get, you know, starting to get attention. And maybe in a couple of years, they're going to be in the same position that guys like Punk and Lethal and, you know, those guys were. So
yeah,
it's exciting
I'm hoping
to watch,
so.
Especially like East Coast.
Yeah, and it's crazy because, you know, I mean, Sammy really came from Ohio, but it took him coming to the East Coast to really blow up the way he, you know, deserved to be from the start.
Mm, for sure. I think a lot of it has to do with the internet, generation. The promotions going on from places like JAPW, like Chikara or Evolve, you know, I think a lot of their online promotion is getting the names out there like they are. Like, if a lot of people compare, like, unfairly compare the indies to, like, the territory days, but I think it's two different breeds. You can't really compare the indies and the territories just because there's an advent of stuff today now that there wasn't back in the territory days. A lot of people didn't have television or didn't have, like, national television or obviously they didn't have the internet back then, but
right. It's
going on now. I think if you were to take away the internet and if you were to take away TV, if you were to take away DVDs, stuff like that, I think it would almost be the same as the territory days. But I think if you kind of like compare the two, you can't really honestly compare the two. Just there's just so much more promotion going on now than there was obviously back in the 70s.
Right. No, I would agree. I mean, it's helped wrestling so much to, you know, broad amount of course, you know, you do get your minuses where, you know, you get your spoilers, you get your, you know, your torrents and you get that type of stuff. But you might lose a couple bucks here, but your name gets across the world a lot faster than it would back then.
Oh, yeah. Like, and you make up your bucks in a different way. You know, obviously the attendance is going to get hit sometimes with, you know, illegal streaming or stuff like that. But the money is made up with merchandise sales that you can promote online, or best of DVDs that you can promote online, or show DVDs that you can promote online.
Right.
Territories didn't really have that back in the day. They had, you know, insider tapes and whatnot. But even back in the 70s, not a lot of people had that stuff. So it was mostly just word of mouth. It's just a different type of word of mouth going on today than there was back then.
Yeah. And it seems like a lot of the, you know, the promoters and stuff, they just really don't get that. Because, you know, as the times have changed, of course, the money's not rolling in the way it would. Not everyone's going to pay for their DVD. But if it creates a buzz around your company, that's what you were going for to begin with. So, I mean, I guess you win some, you lose some, but, you know.
It's a process that takes time. ROH wasn't instantly popular when it came out. It took five, six, seven, 8 years for them to really start drawing huge crowds, especially for, like, an indie. It was all just word of mouth.
You're right.
Online content.
Yeah.
You're definitely right. You're definitely right with that.
Yeah, it actually, speaking of ROH's crowds, I just read today that they're actually getting audited by the New York State Athletic Commission because they were exaggerating their crowds, and then now they're getting called on.
I know exactly where that comes from. That comes from that Best in the World pay-per-view where they said that they had 2,200 people. Well,
probably not.
apparently the Manhattan Center can only hold 2,000 people, so that's odd.
Yeah,
was it standing room only, or was the 2,000 the actual seating?
Well, 2,000 is like capacity. Like they can only
like fire code.
Yeah, fire code wise. I think that's what they're looking into, because when I seen that on the pay per view, you know, and I was like, wow, I was like, there's a lot of people at the show, and like I was thinking to myself, there's not that many exits in that building. It looks, you know, kind of hard to get, you know, if something would happen, you know.
Yeah.
It'd be a fucking disaster, you know.
Yeah. I guess it happens. You like to exaggerate your crowds a little bit, you know. When you pack a house, you know, you pop it up a little bit online, but I guess they only expect the state to call them.
It's a typical indie thing. Like, every, I don't care what promotion it is, every promotion does it. It's not like, it's not like a bad thing, but it helps, you know, it helps get the popularity out to, like, potential fans and whatnot. But, I mean, every promotion does that, no matter who it is. I'm sure even WWE has pumped up, like, numbers in their crowds and whatnot.
Sure.
Especially for pay-per-view, especially for pay-per-views, because, you know, I think that's where it goes.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, you know, now in this current day and stuff, you know, you're actually in the business and everything like that. You know, what are some of the things you're looking to do, or, you know, places you're looking to get?
This may sound arrogant as fuck, but I don't really care. It's just kind of like, it's kind of like my main aspiration. I want to be, someday, I want to be the best in the business. Like, bar none, I want to be the best on the mic, I want to be the best in the ring, I want to be the best wrestler, entertainer, anybody you can, any word that you could describe, like a legend in the business, I want to be a legend. And I know that sounds arrogant as shit, and I don't really care, but, I mean, nobody really got anywhere without having a huge goal set for themselves.
Well, I don't think you can get to be the best without believing you can be. So, that's the best way to start.
Ric Flair didn't get to where he's at right now by doubting himself. He knew what he was capable of. You know, same thing with Shawn Michaels, same thing with Bret Hart, and now CM Punk. I remember, like, listening to an interview the other day, I think it's Bill Simmons' interview, where he had that in mind. He has that kind of aspiration that he wants to be the best in the business or be one of the legends that he grew up watching. Like, he wants to be that. And if you have that mindset that you're going to be that, you will be that, no matter what. Even if it's by an indie kind of standard, I want at least, you know, one person or two people or whoever to be like, wow, Justin Maine, at the end of the day, he's one of the best damn wrestlers I've ever seen in my life. That's what I want to do.
You got your work cut out for you, but like I said, that's a great attitude to go in with, whether they call it arrogant or not. You're going to have to work your ass off to be that, but obviously you already know that.
Yep, I'm definitely working towards that right now, taking whatever steps I can. But it's going to be a long, 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 hard road.
Sure is. Where are some of the places you've worked thus far?
I've primarily worked with VIP Wrestling in Owosso, Michigan, and MCW down in Alliance, Ohio. MCW stands for Main Event Championship Wrestling, so... I think there's like two of them down there, so I was just clarifying that. I've worked for...
there's a couple of MCWs, but...
Yeah. So those are the two primary ones that I've been working with thus far. I'm looking to pick up more bookings later this year. I've been primarily working on schoolwork and just keeping busy with that, finishing up school before I started really working around. And I'm looking to do that from October and beyond, so...
Cool. Oh, that's cool. On at least the short-term scale, of course, I want to be the best in the world. So, you know, there's some top guys that you would have to be working in the future. But, you know, on like a short-term scale, who are some of the people that you'd like to work currently within the
indie? Indie-wise or like nationally?
Yeah.
Indie-wise? Indie-wise. I definitely want to work with Johnny Gargano. Like, he is by far the top of the list for people that I want to work with. I'd like to work with El Generico. The guy is phenomenal in the ring. He does everything. He's crisp with everything. And I think if given the chance, we could really do something, like, in the ring.
He has unbelievable ring psychology as well.
I know. It's insane. I watch him and I'm like, how is, it's not even humanly possible how crisp and clean and, like, it's just, everything he does, no matter what he, no matter the movie does or the movie takes, he just takes it like as perfect as you can, and I just, it boggles my mind how he does it. Like, I try to do that, but it doesn't even come close to El Generico. I have the utmost respect for him.
Yeah, he's damn
but,
good.
El Generico is definitely one of them. Kevin Steen's been getting a lot of attention. I'd love to have a feud with him just based off of, like the mic work. I like the character that he's, like, portraying. It's kind of, like, more of, like, a brash, I don't give a shit kind of attitude. And we know normally when wrestlers or anybody in general has that, they kind of have, you know, oh, I give a little bit of a shit. With Kevin Steen, you get the impression that he doesn't give a shit about anything. And I think there's a lot of possibilities that you can have with a storyline, with a feud like that. Obviously, you know, with the one going on with ROH and Dragon Gate and Evolve going on right now. So those are a couple of the guys I'd like to work with. I'd honestly love to work with anyone. You know, it's just as long as they're willing to put in the work to make the match solid on their end. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so those are some of your favorite indie guys right now to watch, or?
Yeah, for sure. Trying to think anybody else. Those would probably be the top three that I love watching to work on the indies. Then, you know, you got the guys like Chris Hero and Claudio. And
I might be off the indies any minute now, so.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's why I'm enjoying them until they're off the indies, and then I'll start to hate them. I'll be envious and jealous, but No, I respect the hell out of them. Let's see. Toby Klein, I've come to it for advice, like, a lot, so he's been a real big inspiration for me, and I'd love to work with him one day. I think we could have a really good, really, really good match, really good feud if we wanted to, if we ever got the chance to have one.
Yeah, Toby's awesome. But yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, overall, I mean, what's your overall thoughts on Steen and, you know, this current thing going? Because, I mean, the way I see it, it is, I mean, you could go one way and say, you know, it is kind of like a Brian Pillman type thing, the angle he's going. But then in the other angle, it's like, well, it's kind of like the same thing Punk's doing right now. It's a little bit too close to the line on that. But, I mean, he is also busting his ass. He worked three matches on this past Pro Wrestling Guerrilla show. And, you know, he's showing up all over the place. So he is spreading himself pretty thin. And I don't know. I've always respected the guy, so it's not like I don't. But, I don't know. Just kind of hard to see where I'm sitting with that because just kind of like it's kind of a couple other people's thing that he's doing right now. But the Pillman thing, not a problem to me. But you know, how do you see the whole thing he's doing right now?
I see it kind of like from a different point of view. I think it's getting a lot. I think the whole primary reason for this whole Steen thing is to get attention. And it's not just getting attention for himself. It's getting attention for the promotions he's working with. And it draws similar comparisons to the CM Punk angle, but I think they're still two different things. And I can see how you look at it from like that kind of standpoint, but I'd have to disagree. I think the whole storyline is just based off of getting the name out there. If you got this guy going from promotion to promotion, just causing havoc and just hating on everybody and just saying, hey, you know what, fuck the business, fuck these guys, fuck everybody, that creates attention. And he's going to start getting, like, this cult following. I've already noticed it. Like, I'm pretty up-to-date with stuff that's going on in the indie world and I spend countless hours promoting on YouTube and whatnot. So, I've seen the reaction that fans are getting from the storyline, and he's building this huge cult following, almost like what CM Punk had before he even got signed. So it's working on that end. So I see honestly nothing wrong with it, and it can only get better, especially if he, like I said, if he just goes from promotion to promotion and promotion, just shitting on everybody.
Yeah, no, I understand, and it's just, you know, yeah, he is definitely getting a following, and it's not like it's not working. I can't say that for one second, but, you know, it is, you know, like I said, like a little bit of a mimicking of the CM Punk thing, to the point where he started out actually his Evolve promo sitting Indian style in the middle of the ring. Now, if I haven't seen that on my TV just recently, I don't know. But, you know, like I said, it's working. I mean, when I primarily attend CZW monthly, and I was a big, big fan of Kevin Steen when he came in back, I think it was like 04, 05, something like that, when they came in with the big IWA invasion, and, you know, we got Sexy Eddie, and we got El Generico, and Steen, and, you know, the whole nine. And I was a big fan of him back then. He had the Iron Man title, and he did the big run there. And so I've always been a fan of the guy. I'm not for one second saying that I don't like him being successful. I just, you know, just kind of like reminiscent. Looks like a little bit of like a, that's working on TV. Let me do a little of that, you know.
I think, if I remember correctly, I think he, didn't he reference CM Punk at some point? Like, I know, like,
not sure.
I think
not
I could have sworn he referenced CM Punk, so I think it was more of like a tribute than an outright copying.
Yeah, no, I mean, half of the copying goes on nonstop in the business, and honestly, imitation
the
is the biggest
built off
form of flattery. Huh?
The business is built off of copying. What are you talking
about?
Oh
yeah.
About?
Oh yeah.
It's all about imitation and taking what you've seen. You know, guys everywhere, even from the smallest indie guy to, like, the biggest name in the business, they've all stolen something.
Absolutely.
CM Punk, you know, will fully admit that he's taken a lot of his moveset from Kenta. So it's
kind of... Oh, his fucking finisher did not come from his own mind.
Well, just not even just the finisher. It's, like, a lot of the knees that he incorporates, just a whole bunch of stuff. And but in the same regard, a lot of guys, even myself, have stolen stuff or used stuff or copied stuff that we enjoy watching.
Yeah, I've seen your Pele kick.
Thank you.
But no, I mean, if you could do it and you could do it right and you're not going to go out there and pretend as if you created it, I don't see a thing in the world wrong with it. I really don't.
Yeah, exactly.
There's some guys that go out there, and I'm sure you've seen the different, you know, feuds and stuff on the internet. You had Kazarian calling out Sin Cara for doing the Spanish Fly, then the Maximos calling out Kazarian for saying that was his to begin with. It's just, you know, everybody knows
how many. How many guys have done that though? Are you going to call out Paul Burchill or the SAT or?
No, that's what I'm saying. The Maximos SAT. That's you know, it originated as a Spanish Fly, so. Only one of those people are Spanish, so it's, you know, we know. It's just Kazarian, he's kind of known as a guy to, like, rename moves and pretend like he made it up. So I think that's where the whole heat was. But, yeah, I don't see a problem with imitation at all.
Nah. I've had people, like, steal moves that I've done, so.
Right.
Imitation is a sincerest form of flattery is what I had always
right.
been told. So
yep.
That's what I fully believe in.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, if you get to the point where you're telling everybody you made it up, then it's a different story. But otherwise, there's only so many things you could do in the ring. If you do it well, go for it.
That's why I keep on doing the Pele. I've had people tell me, like, yeah, AJ Styles is better. I can't buy the Pele as a finisher, all that kind of shit. But, like, I know for a fact that I do it just as well. And some people have even said better than AJ, and it's viable as a finisher. It's all in the way that you portray the move. It's not about
right.
the move itself. If somebody made a headlock a finisher and they kept on selling the headlock as a finisher and the storyline was based around how deadly his headlock was, it could be viable.
I don't think I'd pop for it, but go ahead.
It's all in the way you sell it, though.
I'm one of these East Coast fans.
It also depends on the crowd. I mean, you look at a guy like Dolph Ziggler in WWE. You've seen the sleeper hold how many countless times, but the way they sold the sleeper hold to the crowd, show after show after storyline, match after match, You could buy that the sleeper hold was his finisher. He finished people off. But on the sleeper hold, oh, shit, you know, the match is going to end now, and then it's just the way it is. As long as it's built up right, I think any move can get over no matter what as a deadlier a finishing move.
Now, what's your thoughts on, speaking of Dolph Ziggler, what's your thoughts on what they've done with him? Because they started out, the guy came out, he kind of, you know, had a, you know, unmistakable Mr. Perfect look to him. And, he's a talented wrestler and everything, and he started to get over, and he started, you know, really get, like, the momentum behind him. They tried to switch him up completely, dyed his hair, cut his hair. Maybe a month later, they went right back to it.
With Dolph, I think they're just trying to find, he's got everything. He's got all the tools. He's got the personality. He's definitely got the in-ring work. I think if there's one guy that could go to the indies from the WWE, I think it would be Dolph, bar none.
The
guy's athletic as hell. But I think they're just trying to find that niche for him to, like, fully express himself as an entertainer, as a wrestler. And I think that's why they keep on bouncing from the Mr. Perfect, the old original Mr. Perfect hair and gimmick and all that, to, like, him shaving his head, dyeing it black, you know, for 2 weeks or whatever it was.
Right.
And then going back to it, because they're just trying to find what gets Dolph over with the crowd. And I think they're doing a pretty good job now compared to how they were before, because they're just kind of booking him in a way that was almost mocking to who he was to who he was in the ring.
Right. I just, myself, like, you know, I never had a problem with Dolph whatsoever, and, you know, I thought that there was no problem with that. I mean, they even put Perfection within his song and his T-shirt, so it was kind of obvious what they were going for. But with McGillicuddy, obviously, you know, the son of Mr. Perfect, in the company, I kind of wondered if they were, like, teetering on whether getting him off that gimmick and trying to work with McGillicuddy, or, and it seemed like they kind of drifted back and forth and then went back, like, nah, Dolph's better set for this, or, you know, whatever the case is there. I don't know.
From what I've picked up, I think it was more of a, it's more of a way to distance Joe Henning from his father.
Right.
I think at this point in his career, it would be a way unfair comparison and a huge shadow to live. Like, he basically being his father's huge, huge shadow.
Right.
So I think they're trying to establish Michael or Joe or whatever you want to call him as his own identity,
right,
before they even go down the whole Henning route with him.
Yeah. It's just weird for somebody to, like, recreate your father while you're working some other shit within the same company. You know, like,
oh yeah, yeah. I could totally buy that.
You know, just
my,
like,
dad's gimmick.
Yeah, like, how come I can't? Oh, okay. Right, well, just do this over here then.
Oh well, they're
see me on the dark match.
$1,000. I'll just shut up and I'll do whatever I'm told.
Yeah, yeah. It's mostly the case, but I don't know. Just different things you observe or watching. You know, you know, what are some of the other things that, you know, you've been seeing today that have been really, you know, been interesting you as far as the TV product goes?
Well, by far, I've been referencing him, like, this entire conversation, but the CM Punk storyline is probably the biggest angle that the WWE or even anybody in wrestling has done in years.
Yeah.
If there's anything that's going to bring an interest back to wrestling, it could be this, as long as they play their cards right with it. But that would by far be, like, the biggest thing that I've noticed.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. And, yeah, like I said, the way he's just completely, you know, taken over, you know, with the mic and, the, you know, the arrogance that he displays and the way that he just carries himself, as you mentioned earlier, it just tells a story that he barely has to say a word. And then on top of that, he's the best mic worker in the business. And it's,
oh yeah,
it's something else, man. Like, I watched the whole Raw just shaking my head and just rolling my eyes and yelling at my TV and fucking looking at my computer for half the time and contemplating whether I should play Madden or continue to watch this, and I'm just like, and then finally, all of a sudden, I hear the Cult of Personality, and like, I didn't even, at that point, I was half asleep, and I blinked up for a second and saw CM Punk, and I was like, wait a minute, and I rewinded my DVR, and I was like, that just happened? Sure enough, I was like, wow, he just saved next week, that's for sure.
The same thing kind of happened to me too. I was kind of like half watching, half on the computer, and I remember hearing Cult of Personality. I'm like, did I just randomly put on Windows Media Player? Like, did I just play the song by accident? Because I wasn't expecting to hear it on TV.
Right.
And I turn around. I'm like, what the hell is going on? Are they playing a Stone Cold Hall of Fame like video package again? Like, what the hell?
Right.
And then I wait for a second, and I see that Punk came out with, like, brand new Titantron and obviously the new song out. I was like, are they really doing that? Like, just based off the fact that, you know, he came out to Cult of Personality, and I thought it was a huge – I thought it was a really cool, like, nod to, like, his old fans and to where he came from. Because
sure.
If you look at his final ROH storyline before he left, it was – they're basically following the exact same path. And I think that's such a cool nod to do, especially to your fans that have followed you through, like, the indies all the way to now.
Yeah. It didn't automatically click with me because I, in the long run, remembered that he came out to that. But the most identifiable thing that I remember him coming out to was the AFI song.
Miseria and, Can't Tear.
Yeah, that... Like, right away, I would have jumped the fuck off my where I was sitting because that was, you know, what I actually sat live and watched him come out to month and month and month. So it was definitely cool either way. Like, great, great move. And I'm sure they paid a bunch of money for royalties because they're not an indie company.
Oh, yeah. It probably,
you know.
I'm sure they considered the AFI song. Like, at some point they had to, but it probably would have been, like, a little bit too much.
Right,
just considering how recent it was compared to Cult of Personality. But I remember saying something on Facebook the other day about how, like, if they would have used Miseria Can't Tear, I would have marked out like a little fucking child.
Right.
Like, seriously, I probably would have jumped out of my seat, like, jumping up and down like a little Japanese schoolgirl. Like, it would have been amazing. Because that was, like, my favorite song back before I even got in the business was Miseria Can't Tear. So to hear that, I would have lost it.
Well, yeah, I agree. It would have been a better move. Honestly, you know, the other song is more well known, you know, amongst the, you know, people, just because, you know, I mean, it was a big, you know, classic hit or whatever. So, being it was used and stuff, it was probably more socially acceptable to whatever crowd. But yeah, that song, the build up and everything else, he took a while to come out, so that build up would have worked phenomenal and. But, you know, a lot of the kids wouldn't have got it, and whatever. It's all good.
Well, it shows when he came out. He out-popped Cena when they did that whole holding the belts thing. And Cena was, like, I think wasn't he getting, like, a pop earlier on in the show, but then kind of, like, it dwindled down in, like, the match against Mysterio? I'm trying to remember exactly how it was, but I remember he was getting, like, a pretty decent pop because that was actually a really good match between him and Mysterio. Didn't really care for the finish, but I saw where they were building up to after the whole Punk thing. But
that was a
really good match.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. Cena's done okay for himself, even though I don't think he's a great wrestler. I think he's gotten over phenomenally with merchandising and that type of thing, and just being like a forced push. But he's done okay with his past couple opponents being hugely talented. He's done pretty well.
Yeah, that does have a lot to do with it.
Quite a bit.
I mean, you work with Punk, you work with Mysterio. You know, those guys are kind of known for carrying people. And I'm not saying Cena is being carried, but, I mean, they are two damn good workers that can carry when need to be.
Right. For sure. What was your complete thoughts on, you know, the whole the match, you know, in Chicago that they actually had? Speaking of
I'm trying to remember my thoughts exactly because I remember watching it with a couple of friends over at a Buffalo Wild Wings that was like kind of close to here. And I normally don't go out to watch WWE pay-per-views. The rate is too expensive, I think. $45 is a lot of bit too much for a pay-per-view. But I don't normally check out pay-per-views.
Is that what
it
cost? But I watched it.
It was $45 when I checked, and I was like, there's no way. I was considering buying it just because of the match, but
I had to watch it.
So I had to go out and watch the show because the way they've been building up to the match, I thought was, like I said earlier, it was just the best I've seen in years. So I remember sitting down watching the match, and I was with my girlfriend, and I told her, I'm sorry if I don't talk during this match because I'm going to be studying everything I'm watching.
Yeah.
So, match-wise, I thought it was probably one of the best WWE matches I've ever seen. Obviously everybody has different tastes when it comes to best match ever or best match in the world or best match of the year or whatever, but I thought, in my own personal opinion, the story of that match was one of the best I've ever seen. That was probably one of the best WWE matches I've ever, ever remember seeing.
No, it was really, really good. Obviously, you know, the two big spots that were blown in, the one couldn't have went any better for me, a guy who doesn't really like John Cena. But, the one was, I don't know. I mean, there's kind of mixed opinions on it. Maybe you have an opinion on it actually being a wrestler, because I'm not. But, you know, I've watched it for countless amount of years, live and not live. But, you know, there was the crossbody out of the corner where, I mean, one can argue that Cena was supposed to step into it, really kind of stood there and caught it in the legs. And then, you know, maybe Punk should have waited till he moseyed his way towards the corner and caught the crossbody. I don't know. You know, I mean, what's your opinion on that spot? I don't know.
That was more on Cena.
If
I remember correctly, Punk was launched to the corner, caught himself on the turnbuckle, and then he crossbodied, and Cena was short. Yeah, I think it was. I think it was more of Cena's mistake because he. Generally, when you do that kind of spot, and I'm sorry if I'm exposing the business. I don't. It's
well, that's what we do
enough,
every week.
But,
I'm sorry.
Okay. I remember watching that. I'm like, wow, Cena was like way too short on that, and unfortunately, he did the mistake. And I've had this happen to me before. I actually had this happen to me in Chicago when I last went there. He fell too early for the crossbody, and that's why Punk landed on his knees. It wasn't because Punk jumped short or because he didn't aim properly. He was aiming pretty well. It was just Cena he stopped too soon and he fell before Punk even hit him. So I think that's what happened with that spot. I mean, they sold it well.
It did still, it moved on. I mean, there was so much more to the match. But the other spot that was only really blown on the sake of Cena's chin because, and man, I know one thing. I know if a guy's hitting a running knee on you, you need to turn your head.
Oh, that knee was so brutal.
He just looked directly at CM Punk, kneeing him in the fucking chin.
I saw that. I instantly like died, and we're like I said, we were kind of like at Buffalo Wild Wings for that match, and I remember during that spot when they were replaying it, everybody in the place was just kind of like went quiet, and as soon as the knee hit his jaw, all I heard was a collective, "Oh shit!" Like kind of like just really loud. You don't expect to hear that in a restaurant, but
right.
But hey,
he definitely should have turned his head.
So he learned his lesson from that. Unless they planned it that way, and if they planned that way, kudos goes to John Cena for taking that shit straight to the chin.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, he almost turned him into Stewie from Family Guy with that fucking knee.
I wouldn't be surprised if he was knocked a little bit loopy after it, because I've taken knees to the chin before, and it's not the funnest experience. You kind of get a little silly after you get hit, so I'm still kudos to him for even continuing on after that, because he could have just, you know, sat down and refused to do the match. I'm sure he would have.
Well, he's got a strong jaw. We can give him that for starters. You know, we'll go from there, but Yeah, but I mean, with all the false finishes and all that stuff, and you really didn't know, you know, and it was, they really put that, you know, suspension of disbelief. You know, they really, like, put that, you really didn't know what was going to happen. And you didn't know that this guy actually signed back with the company. And it was one of those things where no matter how smart of a fan you were, you still didn't know. And that's hard to get back to.
That's extremely hard to get. And that was my favorite part about it was there's so many different scenarios that could have played out, but nobody knew for sure.
Right.
These days in wrestling, you can, you know, go to a website and just look up what the latest rumor going around is or the latest backstage report or whatever. And, you know, jaded wrestling fans that have been watching for years or watch insane amounts of wrestling, you know, even with this storyline, they couldn't figure out what exactly was going to happen. Even wrestlers
right.
in the business, like, I've heard on countless occasions that it was something that made them feel like a fan again. And if there's any person that's jaded in the business, or if there's any person jaded about wrestling, it's a wrestler. Because they're in the business and they know what it's like. They know what to expect. To not
right.
know what to expect with this match was, I thought it was just incredible the way they built it up. And like I said, there's a number of storylines. I myself thought that that Alberto Del Rio, I thought Punk was going to win, and then Alberto was going to come out and you know, cash in his money in the bank. I thought that was totally going to happen because there's no way they're going to let Punk leave. There's no way. And then he goes through the crowd, and that's how they end the pay-per-view with him leaving the arena. That's like, I feel that's almost unprecedented.
Yeah, I mean, but of course he had re-signed, and, you know, we didn't know that, and it was just, you know, we were being worked. And that's hard. It's hard to accept when you're an adult. You think you got the jump on everybody, and then all of a sudden they actually pull it off. And that's, yeah, I give them credit for that. And that's, like I said, very, very hard to do.
They're still doing well with it. As long as they, you know, capitalize on the momentum that's going on with this whole Punk feud, I think he could honestly be, like, not to the same extent, but I think he could be, like, the WWE's version of, like, a new Stone Cold.
Yeah.
Or at least booked in the same way.
And did you hear, here's the other hilarious thing to me, did you hear what happened with the t-shirts that he wore that night?
Didn't they sell out on eBay for like $500?
Yes, they sure did. They printed up, I don't know, 10, 20, 30,000, something like that, for that event. Well, they sold out that night. A lot of guys rushed home, put them on eBay. They sold for fucking $200, $300, up to $500 a piece because people really believed he's never coming back to the WWE, and I'm never going to get this shirt again, even though it had a WWE logo on it, geniuses. And they'll be on the WWE shop next week for $25. Man, that's
I would have been pissed if I were a fan that had like that literally spent that much money on a t-shirt and then found out that WWE released it in the merch section. I would have went ballistic.
You need to be pissed about a lot of things if you're spending $500 on any t-shirt.
Well, then again, you're running into that own issue if you're spending $500 on a t-shirt.
Yeah,
like, you have to know what you're getting yourself into.
Yeah, don't face your anger at fucking WWE because there's no way that's gonna pay for itself.
For five hundred bucks, it better have, you know, a shitload of autographs on it or something.
No, dude, I don't give a shit who autographed it. I'm not $500.
No, but I'm saying there better be like fucking like every goddamn person. You know what I mean? Like, you know, for even you to think about.
For $500, you better be sitting on the turnbuckle of that match. Fuck that.
Right.
$500 better be booked the next night on Raw.
Yeah, right. Something. You're the new general manager.
I'm gonna have a segment on Raw, so I'm gonna spend $500 on a t-shirt.
Yeah, it's.
And you gotta take a body
comical.
From on the outside, so you gotta take a body from on a concrete floor or something. Like legit concrete floor, not no fucking pads, you know.
I don't know, man.
I think. Wasn't there, like, something on the t-shirt that set them apart from the ones that they released in the store? I think they have, like, the date on it. So, I mean, there is a minor bit of a difference. But
that's worth about five bills.
I'll
give you
enough,
about 500 for that date.
You're basically paying for the date on the T-shirt is what the whole $500 is for. Kudos. Congratulations
to
you.
That's pretty sweet. I'm pretty sure I could go to a local T-shirt joint and get that date put on there if I needed to.
I'm sure there's fakes out there.
There's
fakes out there. And if there is, I would be even more furious if I found out that I bought a fake CM Punk T-shirt for $500.
Oh. Yeah, again.
Yeah, but
what
you
have to
do?
Look back at your
yeah.
parents, your upbringing. You have to look at a lot of things before the T-shirt price goes.
You can't really get your money back, though, you know?
Shit. You need a therapist, $500 for a T-shirt. But, yeah, that's, again, like I said, just kind of like a testament to how incredible this whole angle has gone, to how deep it has actually gone. I don't remember Stone Cold shirts going for $500, and I'm pretty sure Stone Cold was one of the most over, one of those, you know, like we were saying, heel slash faces, where you really can't draw the line, but super over on either side of the fence.
Oh, yeah, like, they have something really, really good on their hands with this whole Punk storyline, and if they keep on booking Punk strongly going on into the future, the sky's the limit for the guy. Like I said, I don't think the business is kind of like not at the same peak that it was during the Attitude Era, at least WWE wise. But I mean, to bring interest back to casual fans, to have people spending $500 for your T-shirt that you know you only wore once, or presumably at that time you only wore once. I think that's a huge step in the right direction because you don't see that nowadays. You don't see that kind of interest from anybody, not even John Cena. So
right.
they really, really have to capitalize on this properly.
Absolutely. And Nicole said hi. She's over there in the chat room. She said, what's up?
Hey, Nicole.
What's your... Now we go negative. What's your thoughts on TNA and what's going on over there?
My thoughts? My thoughts, exactly. Well, I'm watching TNA right now, and I kind of have it on the background, and I haven't paid attention to any of it. So if that's kind of like the thoughts that you were expecting, like, that's
hold on.
What my thoughts
hold on. Is it something like this? Hold on. Something like that.
I think the crickets are enjoying the broadcast more than I am.
Very
They're making
possible.
More noise than I am, so.
Yeah.
So
I mean.
It's not the talent in TNA. It's just the booking. It's all the booking.
Some of the talent has to agree to this shit. Let's start with Sting. What the fuck is going on? This is a legend. This guy is just now, he's just cycling through dead actors' storylines to roll with.
That's morbid, but yeah, it's kind of like the truth going on.
He was the Crow, and now he's the Joker.
He did it with the Crow, he did it with the Joker.
I myself am waiting for Frank Drebin from the Naked Gun series.
I don't know if I see it going like I don't see it I don't think I see it as like a step in the right direction, but I mean I see it as kind of like a character evolution and the Sting honestly even myself and I'm a huge Sting fan I will say that something
I always have been
character.
And now it's sad
it just I maybe I need to warm up to it a little bit but I mean it's too eccentric because even if you look at like, when Heath Ledger played the Joker, he wasn't that going, like, that crazy. Like, it was
right.
more of, like, a subdued kind of insane rather than a, you know, a Jack Nicholson kind of Joker insane. And that's more or less what Sting is kind of, like, portraying.
Right.
I think there's guys out there that are doing it better than Sting is, the same exact gimmick. Crimson and Chance Prophet are two examples of it. So
yeah.
I think they're just kind of going a little too...
How old is Sting at this point, though? What is he?
I think he's 52, 53.
52. Yeah. Do you think 52 is the right point for a reinvention, or should we just try it a good last run? You know,
this late in his career, it's probably not really needed.
Reinvention, like they're gonna actually reflect on the Joker days of Sting? No, they're not. I mean, this is sad.
Yeah, he's gonna be remembered for if he's gonna be remembered for anything, it's gonna be remembered for the Crow gimmick. Period.
Yeah.
That's it. And I think that the gimmick was suitable, but I can see back in the day, like I remember, when he first originally went into the Crow after after I studied like a little bit of Sting in before that role. Like I noticed that like there are fans even back then that kind of hated the direction he was going in, because he used to be like a really flashy, eccentric character that just wore colorful like clothes and.
So you mean the Hollywood Sting that had, you know, the crew cut and all that stuff?
Yeah, the Hollywood Sting. Like, there were fans even back then that just kind of, like, dreaded the direction that the Crow Sting was going in. But I think over time they warmed up to it. He slowly fell into the role, and people started seeing it like, oh, this isn't so bad. With the Joker gimmick... I'm hoping it's something that'll just take time for me to get used to, but...
How much time does a 52-year-old have?
Probably until the end of the year, until he decides to be in the business for another year.
Get it going. You know, you got a couple of years. This is a terrible way to retire, and I don't know. Like, yeah, you might have hated it back then, whatever. Hollywood Sting, I mean, but, you know, back in the day Sting, yeah, he might be known more for the Crow time, but, I mean, he feuded with the great Muda back then, you know, as the Hollywood Sting. I mean, he went through times and changes that made sense. You can't make sense out of this shit. I'm sorry. You just can't. He's all ramped up for a feud with Hogan again. This guy can't walk.
That's why I feel like the booking is going in kind of, like, in the wrong direction. And I'm looking at this from kind of like from a fan standpoint. It's just kind of, if I were a fan watching it, I wouldn't be able to follow the storylines because they go in, there's no, what's the word I'm trying to say? Like it's not going in like a linear like storyline progression, because there's always branching off into different storylines. There's no definitive conclusion. And I think as a fan, like I said, I'm watching it as a fan, I can't really feel full, saying in my head, like, I can't feel full while watching it. That's one thing I want to watch as a fan is, you know, being content with the storyline and feeling like, just like you had just eaten a big course meal, you want to feel full with it. You want to feel like, you want to feel happy with it. And I just, I watch it, and I never get this definitive conclusion to a storyline. They branch off from, like, the whole Fortune thing to the whole Sting thing to, you know, they're obviously going to branch this off into something else. Like, Sting feuding with, you know, it was Mr. Anderson, and now it's Kurt Angle, and that next it's probably going to be Hulk Hogan. Like, there's no conclusion for anything.
That has actually been, Hogan leaked that himself, that, like, after this whole, you know, Sting feuding with whatever type thing coming up, he is going to re-enter the ring and start feuding with Sting. Like, he pretty much just dropped, like, his own spoilers just to hype up his own community. It might still be backing him at this point. And that's pretty much we have to look forward to that. And,
But sometimes I don't think they realize what the issue is, though. Like, people tune in to TNA or Impact or whatever you want to call it to watch something that the WWE doesn't provide. That's
right.
What they want to see is, you know, these fast-paced, sometimes 20 to 30-minute wrestling matches that you normally don't get to see on WWE. They don't want, you know, Sting versus Hogan number 5.
No.
And this is coming from a Sting fan. You know, I grew up in the business watching Sting. Or not grew up in the business, but I grew up watching Sting.
Right.
So to say that is like, I don't think they know their audience as well as they think they do.
No. hiring mostly the staff that killed WCW is probably part of the problem. But, I, you know, WCW, I was a bigger fan of WCW than I was WWE at the time. I would, at the time, it was all VCRs. There was no TiVos, no any of that stuff. I was living in my grandmother's house up north, and I would set the VCR downstairs to tape Raw or WCW, you know, Nitro, one way or the other, and I'd be watching the other one live upstairs. And that was the same thing, and I would watch the other one on tape. And depending on which one was more, got me more hyped up the week before, was which one I would watch live the next week. But still, I would watch both, and I was like back and forth. But WCW always had that, you know, they had the Juventudes, the Mysterios, they had the Blitzkrieg, they had all of these just lucha matches that would blow your mind. WWE didn't really go near that. And that's, you know, the thing that TNA actually doesn't embrace as much as they should, because the X Division does have things that the WWE doesn't do. They seem to be going a little bit towards that right now, but they kind of go in and out of it. So I can't really put confidence in the fact that they are kind of leaning that way right now and brought Lowkey back. They just signed Shima Zion, and they brought Jack Evans back. And they've done a lot of things right now that makes me kind of happy about that. They brought Azrael in. But you can only hope they lean really hard that direction, because otherwise, I don't know.
You can't really tell until it's actually still going forward with it, because they, for all we know, it could just be going on for like a month with, you know, Destination X, and then be forgotten afterward. And unfortunately,
right,
TNA kind of has like a history of doing that, bringing back something for like a month or two and then just completely forgetting about it, and then going back to the stuff, you know, that a good portion of their audience doesn't want to watch.
It's hard to put any type of confidence in them. I really do love the whole possibility, you know, that they could be leaning that way. But yeah, you can't call anything definite until it happens, because, you know, it is TNA and they have been inconsistent. So
they have so much incredible talent on the roster. I kind of wish that, like, the booking would be a little bit better, because otherwise they have, like, all the tools that they could possibly need to be, like, you know, a rival for the WWE. It's just the booking is pretty much the one area that lacks over in TNA, at least in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely you can't rival the WWE playing with, 50-year-old guys and just trying to, you know, Hogan limps out to the ring and clears the ring with right hands, and you're burying your young talent. How long are you
even
doing that for?
Yeah, even the WWE is pushing new talent, and WWE, it's not known for pushing new talent. So there's no reason for TNA not to be pushing newer talent. And I think I see them going in like a bit of the right direction with guys like Crimson and I'm trying to think of who else, like I almost call him Tommy Mercer, but yeah, like Crimson was definitely, you know, step in the right direction. I think they're definitely going somewhere with him, with Gunner. I think they're getting the ideas. They just really need to apply them and push them forward and make them the faces of the company.
Yeah. You could hope to bring, I mean, even with Crimson, they brought him in as Red's older brother. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Oh, Jesus. It was just fucking awkward.
I don't know why they didn't just call him Tommy Mercer. I thought that was a badass name. Like, I don't know. I just, like, a good friend of mine is Crimson from PWO. And I felt bad for him the minute that I saw that Tommy Mercer was going by Crimson in TNA. I was like, ugh.
Now, can you give me a brief rundown on that? Because I heard of that, and you're actually friends with the guy. But from what I had heard, he had been sending tapes in. He had used a Joker gimmick, and he goes by the name Crimson. They took a guy, named him Crimson, and then they put this Joker gimmick on Sting. I mean, what? Do you know any inside of that?
I don't know any inside details about it. I haven't really talked to him about it, but I have watched that interview that he did shoot. I think it was with PWO, and they put it online. I remember watching that, and no, it wasn't with PWO. It was I think it was with Justin LaBar. I think
okay.
He did kind of like this interview with Crimson, and I just remember watching, and I'm like, I could draw the line, you know, I can draw the parallels between what's going on. And I mean, like we talked about earlier, the wrestling business is known for stealing ideas. And
of course,
like, while I feel bad for him, I mean, it's not surprising that it did happen. Unfortunately,
yeah.
You know, you have like a guy like Sting that can, you know, that was willing to play the gimmick. And that's what happened, was they, like, something that they saw this indie guy doing and then decided to apply it to one of their own characters. I'm like definitely afraid of that happening with like any of the stuff that I do. So, I mean, it unfortunately just happens. And that's one of the negative aspects of the business, is that stuff is stolen. And, you know, guys that were the original creators aren't given the chance to actually, you know, portray what they came up with.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I mean, like I said, you know, the best, you know, the imitation being a form of flattery goes so far, and then eventually it's like, okay, well, you're kind of cutting into my money, and it is a fine line, and I don't know.
Well, yeah.
You know,
I remember
if
saying
someone
that, like,
came out tomorrow,
affected by it.
Yeah, I mean, if someone came out tomorrow, called himself Justin Maine, and did everything you did, and pretty much had the same tights you did, I don't think you'd call it fucking flattery. You know, that. There's a line.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, I originally kind of, like, drew the line with the whole the imitation thing. Like, I remember one of my friends, his whole tagline in the business was, I'm awesome. And, like, I had never heard anybody else saying it besides him. And
right.
He was, his big tagline, he was trying to make it, you know, big thing online. And then literally, probably, I think like a month or two after he started really using it as a tagline, The Miz started saying it. I kind of looked at him like, this is kind of like, I don't know if it's,
I don't know if it's
like on purpose. It's kind of like a coincidence, though.
Right.
That, I mean, he starts really using this as a tagline, and then 2 months later, The Miz is using it as a tagline, and, you know, now it's as big as hell. Like, it's probably one of the biggest taglines in the business currently. So, I mean, I think there are people out there, there are scouts for, like, TNA and WWE that kind of scourge, you know, the internets and whatever you want to call them, and just kind of look for stuff to apply to their to the wrestlers that they have in the roster. I think either the wrestlers do that or the scouts do that or whatever, but I think sometimes there's more than just, like, a similar coincidence than that.
Yeah.
I think there's more to it.
I agree. There's definitely more to it than that. I mean, you can't just, you know, pull it off with, you know, nothing like put into it other than, you know, the person who actually created it obviously put a little more effort into the thing. So I don't know.
Sorry about, I just missed the last 10 minutes. I had an emergency at the house.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, fucking, we had a huge, we didn't realize we have a fucking huge ass water leak.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so.
Sweet. You want to chime in? You've been away for a minute?
Yeah, I mean.
They're talking about food in the chat room like it's fucking.
So Juan?
Like they're
Juan
placing orders
food?
And shit. What?
What is Juan?
No, not Juan.
Orders
no,
too?
Not Juan. No, it's the girls, man.
Oh.
The girls are all in the chat room between Nicole, Serena, and Nina are just like, da-da-da-da-da, strawberries.
Well, how much are they going to pay for this food?
What?
How much are you going to pay for the food?
Pay for what? What are you talking about, dude?
Well, we're going to open up a restaurant. you know?
Well, you go ahead with that, but, yeah, throw up a question, you know what I mean, topic, something, dude. You just got back.
Yeah, I've been fucking moving shit and all types of shit. But, I was going to ask this before, Justin. I see on your Facebook, I don't know if this was like a seminar you did, but it said you trained with Al Snow. Was that like more like a seminar that you did?
Yeah, it was more of like a seminar, and it wasn't so much of like an in-ring seminar as it was like a knowledging seminar. Like he helped answer questions that sometimes aren't normally given to wrestlers when they're getting trained or getting brought into the business. And with his experience, it was kind of, you know, it did open up some, like, my eyes. And I know it opened up a lot of the guys' eyes that were in the seminar. So, it was more of like a cluing in, if anything.
Did by any chance he say anything, because I know every time he does interviews and so that, he always talks about that seven-step, you know, match and so that. And I know he fucking hates that shit. And he always fucking starts screaming how he hates that seven-step match.
That was definitely one of the points he was talking about in the seminar. I think it's just a staple at this point for Al that he talks about the seven steps. But he's right, like, about the seven steps, because everybody does it. Everybody from the Indies to WWE to TNA to sometimes even ROH, like, you see the seven steps sometimes. And, like, I think it's drawn out way too much.
And it's like, and I remember hearing an interview, he's like, I don't even know where the fuck this came from. This wasn't even, like, who the fuck thought of seven steps? If I ever find out who thought of that shit, I'm going to punch him in the face. I'm dying over there. I'm fucking dying laughing over there, you know, because, you know, and he basically said, you know, sometimes you can kind of be like, this is the same fucking match as the previous match, or, you know, same shit, same fucking, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. I don't know what you're talking about as far as what the seven steps are, but I know there's definitely formulas of matches that, like, you know, as a fan, you'll start watching, and then you're just going, well, all right then, this is what they're going to do. Rep distraction, cheap shot, fucking roll up, fucking shit. Like, certain shit you can see coming from a mile away, and it's just, creativity is fucking boss in this business, and, you know, if you're able to do that and actually keep the fans on the edge of their seats, then you've done your job right. I mean, if it's an obvious scripted role, like you've seen the movie 12 times and you're like, well, this is the part, hey, watch this, he's about to do this shit, and he does that, then that's not good.
Yeah, that's actually a very good comparison between, like, the seven steps and, you know, in a match to an actor who plays the same role in every movie. I mean, you look at a guy like Zach Galifianakis. He plays basically the same gimmick in every movie, whether it's The Hangover or if it's like that road trip movie that he did. So you apply that to wrestling, you know, not every person wants to see the same match for, you know, 2 to 3 hours every time they watch wrestling. I know if I were a paying fan, I wouldn't want to see the same formulaic match for like 7-8 matches straight on a card that I'm putting money down on. So I think creativity is almost like a lost art nowadays, and I think it needs to be embraced more than it is.
Yeah, creativity is awesome, and a lot of promoters, I've actually talked to wrestlers, and I told them, dude, man, your shit's looking like really, you know, the same as, like, your past 5 matches. And he's like, yo, I came in here with 5 ideas, and they shot him down. They said, no, don't. We don't want to see that. Don't do that. And so, I mean, I guess it's not all the wrestler's fault when that type of thing happens, because some stuff is scripted, you know, beyond their power. But, you know, either way, creativity is definitely boss.
You can't really put the blame on anybody. It's just, it's almost something that just happened just because of the direction that the business has gone in. It's not so much of a sport anymore as it is like a story. And the most popular story is the one that is easily told. So, I mean, if you got like the token match where, you know, Babyface shines, heel takes over, or, you know, Babyface gets his big heroic comeback, and then you go straight to the finish. I mean, that's generally an easy thing to remember and an easy thing to play out in a match. It's not really any easier to go in a different direction than that. And, I mean, if you I think if your creativity is kind of like shot, then you unfortunately fall into that kind of path where you just need that formulaic setup.
Now, Justin, I know that you haven't been in the business as long as some other, veterans have been in the business, but from your perspective and from the time that you spent, what do you think, there's any, like, changes that you think would help the business that you personally would like to see happen? Any changes?
I think the internet needs to be embraced more. I think, like we've been talking about earlier in this broadcast, that I think it just needs to be embraced more. And a lot of people don't understand, like, how powerful the internet can be when it comes to promoting. You look at a guy like Zack Ryder, or another good example would be Claudio Castagnoli, or Colt Cabana.
Right.
You know, they're really, really getting their names out there and promoting online, and they can make a living off of this just because of how well they're promoting. And I've talked to promoters before that were just kind of like iffy about using the internet to get the word out, and they would say it would affect the draw, or it would do stupid shit like that. But it honestly doesn't, because if you promote in the right way, if you come up with some sort of online deal or whatever, where you can get like two tickets for the price of one or just something like that, I think that's a good way of getting, the word out there that your promotion is something to be seen.
Right.
Conversely, for like a wrestler, you want to be seen. That's your goal in the business. You don't want to just wrestle for like five or six fans in the crowd. You at some point you want to wrestle for a lot of people, because that's what you enjoy doing, is entertaining people. So, when it comes to using the online as a promotional tool, for YouTube or Facebook or Twitter or whatever, it's the best way nowadays to get your name out there besides TV. And even then, there's millions, maybe even billions of people that are on the internet compared to how many people watch TV. So I think the internet needs to be focused on more, especially by the big companies. WWE is starting to catch on. TNA is kind of floating around with it, but I think in the next step in the business has to do something with the internet as a promotional means of getting the name out there.
I mean, the internet for a company or for a wrestler, and like you just said, the internet could help you, but it could also hurt you if, you have a bad show. You know damn well people are going to go out there and fucking say, this was a shitty-ass show. They'll fucking even pick up the DVD. And by the power of, the word of mouth and stuff like that, you're going to see a lot of people go, oh, that was, well, if that guy said it was bad, he must, he always says the show's good. So if he says it's bad, it's got to be bad. You know what I'm saying? So, like, the internet could hurt, or it could also help the wrestling business.
Yeah, I can see your viewpoint on it. But then again, it's like that anywhere. It's like that with stores, you compare
right.
a store from another store. Like, this one store has something that I'm looking for, but this other store, isn't as good as this store. It's kind of like you find that in every avenue in life. So
Right. I understand.
It helps you keep you on your game, though. If somebody says that you had a bad show, then you better improve it next time, because if you don't, then you're going to get constantly known as the one wrestler or the one promoter or whatever that has bad matches or bad shows consistently. So,
right.
I mean, it helps you in that way to, keep you on your game and not lose sight of having, a quality product.
Over time, of your, career thus far, what are a couple of your favorite matches you've done?
I actually just uploaded this on my YouTube. But one of my old favorite matches was a 30-plus minute match that I had with this guy named Major Money. He goes by Maserati Rick now. But that was like one of my favorite matches because he works in almost the same kind of style that I do, and he's just so easy to just talk to and, you know, get ideas from, and he's up for anything. It's just he's such a fun opponent, and he was watching it and having that memory of that 30-plus minutes that we worked. Like, it was just it was a really good match that I'll never forget. Recently, I had a really really challenging match with, not a bad way, but, like, really challenging as in, like, how well it turned out, with Mike Hercom for MCW. We had an Indian strap match, and that was my first ever one, and good Lord, that thing hurt like a bitch. I'll tell you, that you don't know what hurts until you get hit by a leather strap. Hurts bad. But that was probably one of my favorite matches, just due to the fact that I've never had that type of match before. And the story we told in the match, I thought it was a great story that definitely got along with the fans, and they put themselves into the storyline that we were having, and I think that was a very, very good blow off to the feud that we had just had.
I mean, what's your opinion? Being you're speaking of, you know, stipulation matches and that type of thing, what's your opinion on, you know, the hardcore deathmatch scene?
I think it's just like a genre of wrestling. Like, you know, how there's different genres, like puro, like Lucha Libre. I think there's just, you know, a different audience, a different genre, and I don't see anything wrong with it. I mean, if you're going to kill somebody, legit kill somebody or physically hurt them for the rest of their life, I think the line needs to be drawn in that regard if you're going to do, like, some crazy-ass spot that could physically almost kill somebody. But,
agreed upon, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if you're going to take matters into your own hands and try and fuck with somebody even though they don't agree to it, I think that's where I would draw the line with hardcore death matches, but I've never had, like, an issue with it. I've enjoyed quite a few of them. I remember my favorite hardcore match that I've ever seen was, I'm trying to remember the exact promotion. I don't remember the exact promotion, but I watched it online, and it was this crazy-ass match that took place in a house in Japan. Like, they had built this house specifically for this match. And I think Madman Pondo was in it. And I thought that was by far the most entertaining match I'd ever seen.
Like,
at least hardcore wise, like, that was just, if anybody is a fan of hardcore wrestling, you need to check out this match because it's seriously insane. I think it went on for like 45 minutes.
Wow!
Good Lord.
It was Pondo and who, do you know, or
Pondo, Abdullah Jr. He was in it.
This was in Japan?
Yeah, this is in Japan. I think Too Tough Tony was in it, but I'm not quite sure.
Okay.
But try and look it up. I don't know the exact specifics of it, but I do remember watching this match and watching how crazy it was. Like, they even had, like, a backyard. It was that crazy.
Do you think deathmatch wrestling could ever make it to the mainstream and have a place on TV as other wrestling styles do?
I think yes and no. I think there's a specialized audience for it. You're probably not going to get, like, a casual fan that just kind of, like, that likes wrestling for almost like the superhero aspects of it. Like, you're not going to get a John Cena fan that's going to want to watch a death match.
No, for that.
Okay.
I mean, it's a different genre.
But,
I mean, it's, you know.
Exactly. I think if they play to the genre correctly, I think it could be something that, especially teenagers or, young adults, I think somebody, or something that they could really latch onto and follow if it was given that kind of attention.
Right.
Well, What I thought was an interesting concept, and, you know, I mean, it didn't last
But Wrestling Society X had that kind of crazy feel to it. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, that's
what was crazy
like
that. About that was the fucking do-overs and fucking 30-minute shows with five matches. That's the crazy part about that. That's not wrestling. I mean, it's packing all the spots into a a 2-minute match. Just packing nothing but high spots into that. No build, no story, no anything.
And there's do-overs anyway. There's a bunch of do-overs. Anyway.
And cut, try that again. We didn't like the way you came up with that flippy thing. Like that's really not wrestling. But
WSX was like mostly, from watching, it was mostly like eye candy. It was all like... It was all, like, sizzle and no steak, really. And I don't have, like, an issue with that per se, but it's just kind of like, I mean, it was more of entertainment than it was wrestling. You watch WSX because, oh, this guy's doing a crazy spot, this guy's doing a crazy spot, but you never really got too in-depth with it, and you don't really remember anything from it because they didn't really pay enough attention to the actual build-up. If you know what I mean, like in the matches and whatnot.
Right.
So I think it was just more like eye candy than anything. But
to a certain.
There are people that like that.
You can imagine though, like if that type of thing took off, it could be really, really bad for wrestling. Honestly, you know, if that became like the mainstay of wow, these guys are getting ratings. Oh, you guys don't need to keep doing rest holds because. They're really getting over with these high spots. Just do those. Like, that could really fuck up wrestling.
For sure. Like, especially with, like, wrestling is already a dangerous profession as it is. And I don't care if anybody, like, thinks if there's a way to, like, protect people, because there isn't. Because I've been injured doing even the most minor of things, like stepping off of a ring. So to consistently force, I'm not saying this is how it was in WSX because I honestly don't know for sure. But if somebody's forcing me to do high spot after high spot because it's the only thing that gets over, like that not only endangers myself, that endangers the guy I'm working with, and that you know could shorten a guy's career. Like
of course,
I mean there's a time and a place for it, and I don't think it should be the bulk of a match. Or
right.
The main reason why somebody's watching is to see people kill each other. I think there's a safe way to kill each other, and I think there's a dangerous way to kill each other. And if the business ever went in the direction of using high spot after high spot because that's all people wanted to see, then I think the business would definitely be going down the wrong path.
Yeah, and a lot of people's careers would be a lot more short-lived, and, you know, it would not do a good thing for wrestling, in my opinion. It's nice to watch for now, but... Yeah, I mean, if boxing
just
only lived off of knockouts, there wouldn't be much more boxing.
And then you just get, like, used to, like, the high spots. Like, you've seen them before. Like, you've seen them before, and what else can you do? I'm sure they're having that problem with, like, you know, Ultimate X matches in TNA or Money in the Bank matches in WWE. Like, there's only so many times that you can do, like, a dangerous spot because if you recycle it for another match, then, you know, you get the hardcore fans that are saying, oh, well, we've seen you do this before. We don't appreciate it. Yeah, sure, it's dangerous, but we want to see something new. I mean, you got to really balance it out with how many times you use, like, a high spot or, like, a dangerous spot or whatever. And
right.
I would hate to see the business go in that direction where it's just high spot after high spot. There's just no... There's
it's cool
no
to watch. More or less, I feel like that's the direction Teddy Hart went with his career, and probably not a good look. But hey, man, Eric, you got any questions, right quick, or what?
Well, I pretty much have everything covered that I wanted. You know.
You covered everything. Listen, man, yo, you watch football?
Mainly NFL and mainly the Detroit Lions.
Right. So
I'm one of those
do you still like
fans.
Football being a Detroit Lions fan, or are you kind of mediocre football fan right now.
I'm more of like a mediocre football fan. I just, like I said, I only follow the Detroit Lions. I'm one of those hometown fans that just doesn't really care about anybody else but the hometown.
Well, you still have Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. You know, we want to talk a little football as well tonight. I mean, if you want to chime in, you're more than welcome. I mean, so, Eric, I mean, so what were some of the things that happened now that we are out of the lockout? We are back
right.
to football season.
The lockout is over. Thanks freaking God. All right. Thank God that freaking lockout's over because
Mr. Ocho Cinco went to fucking New England.
He's in
right,
New
right.
England now?
Huh? Yeah.
He got traded
what?
To the Patriots.
Yeah. He's got Tom Brady throwing balls to him. So if he don't produce
Holy
now,
shit.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, he really needs to produce now or he's just going to be like one of those flames that burn out really quickly. So
yeah.
if you can't like catch a Tom Brady football, then
yeah,
get out.
Yeah.
And
I've always thought he's been more hyped than fucking product. Because for many years, Hoosh Manzada was putting up more numbers than he was. And, you know, he was being the big media guy. But, you know, catching balls from Tom Brady, dude, you're either going to show up or shut up. And he doesn't shut up easy, so I guess we'll see.
Right.
Yeah, this is his opportunity.
Sure is. What else is going on then?
Well, my boys traded their... trade Kevin Cobb. We got in Arizona for Dominic Rogers Cromartie, fucking sick ass corner. He's gonna tear him up. Tear him up. Watch
they
out,
had to get rid of Cobb because they staked their business on him. They tried to make him mainstay and put Vic at the backup, and that wasn't gonna work. So now Cobb thinks
right.
he's a starting
well,
quarterback.
Well, now they're looking at. They're looking at Vince Young because Vince Young got released from the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, where did Cobb go?
Arizona.
Yeah, fuck that shit, man.
Yeah, you got to deal with that shit over in the West Coast.
No, I don't have to deal with a goddamn thing because Arizona ain't going to be shit with Kevin Cobb. But,
your boys released Nate Clemens.
Yeah, that's a terrible idea, man. You know, I heard Nate Clemens, you know, was looking for too much money, and I guess that type of thing happens. But
was he worth it, though? Do you think he was worth it, or do you think...
He was a solid corner. He was a solid corner, man. We are in desperate need of a corner. You know, when letting go of Nate Clemens, we definitely are in desperate need of a corner. We let up a lot of fucking points in this past couple of years.
Right.
You know.
In other news, the Lions folded up their fucking football team.
Not cool. You'll see this year. I swear to God, the big two, Sue and Fairley, are going to impress the fuck out of you. You're going to see it.
Well, they got
D-line
the big QB, right?
What, are you going to have the most losses in the league or what?
Nah, they've been doing that. But they got the big QB, though, right? Look at they got.
Stafford.
Stafford, right?
Yeah,
as long as
Stafford stays healthy, he'll. I think they got a real good shot for at least getting into the playoffs this year. As long
hey,
as
come
everything
on,
gels.
They were
Calvin
a scrappy
Johnson.
Defensive team for a minute, and they just kept catching losses either way, but, I mean, they were scrappy.
Yeah, well, they started off the season rough, and I think, or last season, they started off kind of rough. They had, like, a whole lot of injuries. Calvin Johnson, you know, hurt himself. Stafford hurt himself. You know, they started off just kind of, like, bad. But I think they finished off last season really well, despite what they had. I mean, they didn't even have Stafford. So, I think that says a lot about their willpower towards the end of the season. I think they finally found the right footing. I just hope that they don't lose sight of that next year. And I think that was one of the downfalls for the Lions for years was the fact that they just kind of, if they don't do well, they get lazy. They don't continue to try to get better. So I'm just hoping that doesn't happen this year. And with that, like I said, they got that massive D-line going on. They got healthy guys. Stafford's working to be healthy as well. I think they're going to have a very good season.
Yeah, I mean, you can only hope. You know, I'm a Niners fan, so, and Eric's an Eagle fan, so that's where we're coming from. But
when you say that the people are being lazy, who do you blame that on? Do you blame that on the coaching staff for not getting their players ready, or do you blame that?
It's kind of like an issue with both. The coaching staff for not really setting them in a right direction, even if they are losing, you know. Because I've watched more than one Lions game where if they're already losing, they're not really trying to get back into the game. They just kind of have this horrible issue with if they're losing, they'll play enough to not lose any worse. They don't play to win. And I thought that was a big issue for a while, and I think that's more of like a coaching issue than anything. But it also falls back on the players for not being self-motivated. And I think for a long time they didn't have the right players for the team that could self-motivate themselves to be, you know, the best in the game. And it applies to wrestling, too. If, you know, you're not self-motivated and you're not telling yourself, you know what, I'm going to be the best damn player on this field, or I'm going to be the best damn wrestler in this ring, then you're not going to play like one. So I think a lot of it had to do with the motivation behind the team, behind the coaching, and hopefully I'm hoping to see that fixed this year.
Yeah.
Cowboys released Marion Barber and Roy Williams, so.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah,
crazy.
They released them both. And who the fuck else was released? I'm trying to think of some.
Roy Williams?
What I just said. Yeah, he got released too.
Marrying the Barbarian, huh? Uh-huh.
Marrying the Barbarian.
We'll see who picks that up.
Released? Who else really got released?
He's a banger, man.
Who, Barber?
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's
you can have him. Why don't you get him? Why don't you go for the
Lions? I don't know, man. We got Franco holding on. I don't want to say we got your
he's
boy over
that,
there.
That's
okay, man. It's okay.
Training camp for Philly for the Eagles is like 5 minutes away from my place. So
nobody cares.
No, nobody cares that the 49ers are going to be fucking 1-15 this year.
Oh, yeah. We got
maybe
five Super Bowls to sit on. Catch up and we'll talk.
Blah, blah, blah. Super Bowl doesn't. Where the fuck is that?
People start with that blah right? talk as soon as you put the numbers out. It's all good. Anyway, yo, let's talk to Justin about some wrestling, man. This is crazy. Trying to get back in here. What else we got going on? Shit. I don't even know. Eric, Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, we covered a lot of fucking wrestling.
We
covered
we
DNA.
Sure
we covered
sure
WWE.
Have.
I don't know if you want to ask him anything in particular.
I don't know what you're talking about. But yeah, man. Justin, you want to give any plugs? You know, any shout outs, plugs, whatever you want to, you know, put out there?
Yeah, sure. If you want to see more of myself, the 5-star attraction, the Hollywood sensation, and the main event, and I call myself a whole shit ton of names. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter. Facebook is Justin Main, facebook.com/Justin Main. Twitter is twitter.com/THS Justin Main. I'm not very big on YouTube, but I do put up a lot of content
kind of
on YouTube. I'm working on it. I'm trying to get to Zack Ryder levels here, but you know, it's a slow process. I don't have exposure like he does, or at least like he did. I don't know what's going on with Zach, but you can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/THS Justin Main. And I'm pretty up to date on social media. You can follow me anywhere, and I'll keep you up to date on shows that I got coming up. I got MCW a whole ton in August, and then I got MCW and VIP in September. So you can find the dates for those. The next show I'm working is MCW in Alliance, Ohio on August 6th.
You got Twitter?
So just,
you got
yeah, I have Twitter.
That's figured everybody.
I'm a Twitter.
Every...
I think the past sense of that is twat. Have you twat?
I tweet my twat all the time.
It's getting late. It's all good. But yeah, I don't think, you know, Eric got anything else, and you know, I'm pretty much good. I'd like to thank you for coming on, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for having me. It was a blast.
Not a problem, man. You've been a great guest, and you know, anytime, man, hit us up.
Thank you very much, man. I'd love to be back on again.
No problem, man. Yeah, I wish you the best of luck in, you know, everything you're doing. And hopefully we see that best wrestler ever tag on you, and we'll be the guys that put you on the radio.
Thank you very much, man. You guys stay starstruck, all right?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Yo, we'll talk to you later, man.
All right, take care.
Peace.
Bye.
All right. All right, Eric. That's what it is, man. That's Justin Maine. He was a great fucking guest. Great guy to talk to. Carried phenomenal conversation and everything. I can't go any further. I actually should have started the show with this, but I got to congratulate Drake Younger and his wife, Val, you know, for the birth of their child, Sophia, and that's what it is, man. You know what I mean? That's my homeboy. And very, very proud and... you know, happy for him and his family. And, you know, it's big things, man. That's big to anybody's life. Their first child, I mean, goes a little far outside of wrestling where it's a big, big deal. Now, going back to that type of thing, talking about CZW, you could see him at the head of that fucking card, Tangled Web 4, August 13th. Drake Younger versus Scotty Vortex in a two-ring Cycle Circus Tangled Web match. Like,
live on pay-per-view.
Live on iPay-per-view. You can go on a motherfucking computer and watch that shit. If you're too far out of fucking range, you go on the computer and watch that shit, because this one is going to be special. I guarantee you that shit. And I don't even have any, like, inside link to that shit. Like, I'm cool with these cats and everything like that, but believe me, I got a feeling this is going to be one special. And if I'm wrong, then you feel free to email me and just be like, yo, you was dead wrong. That shit wasn't special at all. I mean,
well, you
and
know
what's going to
be special about it? You know what's going to be special about it? Yours truly will be in the house.
Yeah. Well,
no, don't
you
be
know,
playing it off.
That's cool, too. But, however, Drake Younger and Scotty Vortex are going in a circus fucking two-ring circus death match. And I, you know, I have a big, big feeling about this match. So then you also have Devin Moore defending against the Black G's.
Who's walking out of Philly? Who's walking out of Philly with the C? I said, who's walking out of Philadelphia with the CZW World Heavyweight Championship,
it's
mind you?
It's Devin Moore, in case you didn't hear me, versus...
I rode into town on an ass. Yo mama's ass.
That guy. And, you know what I mean? It is what it is. It's off the hook. And, you don't know. You might see a new champion. You also have the new horror, Sammy Callahan, against B.J. Whitmer, returning to CZW. And should be a pretty interesting match. I mean, B.J. Whitmer has always been a very impressive, strong-style wrestler, and we haven't seen him in CZW in quite some time. I believe he was out of the wrestling business for quite some time. And now he's back, and he's challenging the new horror, Sammy Callahan. What I would like to call the face of CZW right now, because this guy has done it all, from Cage of Death main events to shots at the world title. my opinion, should have been held the world title for a long time now. But instead, no. I can't even get into that. So anyway, we got him versus BJ Whitmer, and that's going to be a great match. And that's what we got there. We also have Matt Tremont in a rematch against Little Mondo in an ultra-violent tables match. And I love Rory, but Matt Tremont better kill his ass because they put Matt Tremont on too fast of a rise. They put Little Mondo Rory on too slow of a rise. So they really need to split that. Those two guys are not a good match right now. They could put on a really good match up. However, like, the role that they put these two guys on don't line up at all. I mean, like, one guy was put on somewhat of a role. The other guy wasn't put on a role. I mean, so I need to see Matt Tremont go towards the top of the deathmatch scene. I need to see Little Mondo climb up the deathmatch ladder. And I need to see him in a deathmatch, say, like, next month type thing. Not next month, like August, because obviously he's fighting Matt Tremont. But, like, say, September, put this guy against 13 and let him fuck with 13. And then, like, that type of thing, and build up off of that, because 13 is on the deathmatch scene, but he's also not like a top guy. You put Matt Tremont over the Necro Butcher. So, what the fuck? Now you're going to tussle with Little Mondo, who lost the fucking DJ Hyde? Yeah, I know he's the owner of the company, but let's get fucking serious. It's not the same thing. Not the same thing at all. That's very, very different, you know? You put a guy over the fucking Necro Butcher and then have him pretty much getting fucked up by, you know.
Right.
I don't know, man. A guy who fucking gets put down to fucking DJ Hyde, as far as that fucking goes,
I don't like the cut of your jib, fella.
That's just the way I feel. I just, you know, not a big fan of that. I don't really understand it. I just don't.
Everybody has their feelings on DJ, you know what I'm saying? But DJ owns that company, so.
Yeah, a lot of people have opinions. I mean, you find opinions all over. You'd be surprised. Even, oh, my God.
He's a jackass.
The president doesn't like that motherfucker. I didn't even know. That's crazy. Fucking George Costanza.
Well, the jerk store called. They're running out of you.
Shit, he don't even like. Oh, God damn. I don't know. There's been people who have said that fucking DJ Hyde could be the next world champion, and people would care. And then I heard this.
I'm like, really? Because no, you fucking can't.
I don't know, dude. I hear shit all over the fucking place. My personal opinion, and, you know, I got echo the sentiments of my homie Bill Burr. It's like,
starting them off, you got a gun, fucking shoot them in the face.
And might not be the right way to go about it, but, you know, it's okay.
Everyone cares, though. Everyone cares. Let's hear it.
Everyone cares.
We don't care. We don't care. We don't care. We don't care.
Huh. That's weird.
That is weird. I thought people cared.
Yeah. I thought everybody cared. I guess not.
Shut up!
Weird.
Huh. Really weird.
It is. Nah. I mean, I just, you know, I sit there and I just think about,
where,
like,
are Biggie and Tupac?
How you doing?
Yeah, I just, where are Biggie and Tupac? I mean, the president asked you, why the fuck are you? I mean, if the president cares about this topic.
Where are Biggie and Tupac? These are the kind of decisions that would keep me up at night. Someone should get to the bottom of that.
You know? That's,
Do you smell what Barack is cooking?
I don't know, man. I just, you know, I try to grasp it and I try to run with it, you know what I mean? But it's really difficult because there's so many things you got to deal with within the day. You know, you hear that shit? And, you know, DJ's putting these different things on, and sometimes you just sit back and you're like, you know,
fucking bullshit!
But, I mean, you know, there's so many other good things going on in the indies and definitely within CCW, you know.
Right.
What the fuck is... What? People shouldn't take what personal? Oh. Oh, wow. Like, where did that come from? Wow. Nina, where did that come from?
I can't even read the chat room. The chat room still says that was a good song. You there?
Oh, I see what they're talking about. Yeah. You know what? I mean, yeah, I actually caught a good amount of heat off of that. And overall, like, I'm not, like, completely against these dudes, but, like, when it comes right down to it, like, my opinion on these cats is just, like...
Fuck them up your wall! We're hands up, folks! We're crazy doing all this! That's all you do!
Yeah, that's all you do. You know what I mean? It's just... I don't know, man. There's, you know...
I rode into town on an ass. Yo mama's ass.
And that's not really, you know what I mean? Like, if you know a dude's rolling like that, and then, you know, he comes off on some...
Do I have everybody's attention now?
And you happen to be standing there with a t-shirt and a fucking banner. Well, then honestly, come on, dude. You know, I mean, these guys have actually learned from their mistakes now. And they, you know, they're going on some shit where they're just like, all right, I'm going to walk out on the guy's mat because I don't like him. Well, you know what? That's a better fucking statement. That is showing that you won't support him. You do not want to be around his matches. And like I said, I caught heat off this shit. Like, cause I joked about this shit, cause yeah, I think it's fucking comical. However, I understand that they're severely upset, but you know what? Like, fuck. You're the ones making fucking banners. You're the ones making fucking t-shirts. And I'm sorry if I hurt your fucking feelings, but he's the one that made you mad, and you ain't about to do shit to him. And, you know what I mean? Like, I talk shit, but you know why? Because...
All my life, people telling me I'm fucked up!
And that's the fucking fact of the matter. And I just fucking see shit at face value. And if someone goes out of their way, seriously, Nicole, like, you might not see the whole shit. You might see the emails and shit that people are sending to people. But in the same token... Oh, jeez. Nicole can't hear. Oh, God help us.
Lord help us. God help us very much.
What?
Nah, you sounded for a second like you were British. That's why I started doing a British accent. For 1 second, you sounded British.
What is Jay referring to right now? I'm talking about the G's thing that happened with the fan. This fan,
God help us, Jesus. God and baby Jesus help us.
Now this fan, let's call him Steve, because that's his name. You know, the thing is like, I never had a problem with dude. I always thought he was a cool dude. Apparently, you know, when I joked about it on a past show, he caught feelings. And, you know, he emailed me fucking the other night, and you know what I mean? And again, I don't have a problem with dude. I don't have a problem with him, his girlfriend, whatever. But my statement on the whole shit is this. Imagine any heel in the business, okay? They're coming out there on some fuck you fan shit, right? and you are booing more than anything else. And honestly, the only way to put a heel over is boo them. So you're pretty much cheering for that guy. That's how the wrestling business works. I know you might not understand that, but that's the truth. And when I don't like a guy and he happens to be a heel, I don't say a fucking word. Niles Young never got a fucking boo out of my mouth because I don't think he's talented. I don't think he's worth my fucking voice. So I sat there with my arms folded, looking at fucking pictures on my camera or listening to my motherfucking iPod. That's how you fucking disrespect someone who doesn't deserve your fucking credit, doesn't deserve your reaction, and he's a heel. You don't boo louder than anybody in the crowd because you know what? You just put him over. Now, you guys go further than that. You actually go to somewhere that makes t-shirts. You go out there and you put Gary Coleman on the t-shirt and put Sabian Sucks underneath it. That's cute. And that to you was funny. Okay?
Right.
Then after that, you go out there and you have a banner made. A fucking banner. I don't even know where to go to make a banner if I wanted to. For a guy that you hate. You paid money for t-shirts. You paid money for a fucking banner. And you hung that over the railing in front of you. Saying to stop booking Sabian. You know? This is your work. This is what you've done. This isn't me. I didn't do this shit. You know what I mean? So now that the super heel guy who's screaming fuck the fans and dying for someone to say fuck you back, he's got a banner, t-shirts, and people screaming their fucking lungs out on one side of the guardrail. Huh. Do you think he's not going to feed into that? Let's be fucking real. This isn't hate on anybody's character. This isn't fucking me bashing a person. Nobody should feel fucking bad towards me because you fed into a heel deeper than I've ever seen in any fucking crowd I've sat into. And I've been going to fucking indie wrestling since 2001, regularly, monthly. Fucking seriously.
This is, wow.
This is what I said. You know what I mean? This is what I commented on and thought it was really fucking funny. Because then somebody commented on, well, you shouldn't talk about wrestling for more than a minute, otherwise it's pathetic. It reminds me of my mother talking to her friends about soap operas. And I said, well, that's really funny coming out of you. Well, then I got the tirade out of the dude talking about, yeah, I was going at you to begin with, and blah, 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 blah. But, and, you know, I went back to him, and I don't really care that I'm going public with this shit because, honestly, ain't shit going to happen to me. And, again, I never claimed to fucking try to start beef with somebody because that's not what I go to wrestling to be entertained and to enjoy myself. I don't go to fucking wrestling to start fights with other people who are ridiculous and out of their fucking mind. So I don't make someone what they are. If they decide that they want to go crazy and they want to talk out of their fucking reckless ass mind, and maybe I'll have a banner next month. I don't know, dude. I'm just saying, like, it's unnecessary. Enjoy yourself at the show. Stop spending money on people you legitimately hate. I've never, ever fucking bought a fucking Z-Bar banner, a Z-Bar motherfucking
t-shirt.
I've never bought a Niles Young fucking banner or t-shirt. These are people I legitimately do not like. I see them in the fucking ring. I do not even want to watch the match. And I have walked the fuck away. You know? And Z-Bar had a whole crowd of motherfuckers walk away in IWA. Oh, that actually hurt his feelings. Okay? So, why don't you spend that money on flyers to spread around or, you know, buy the fucking majority of the crowd a case of beer and just hand out beers and be like, I'll give you a beer if you just walk away from that one match. That's all. And the fucking crowd walks away, and the dude gets butthurt. So, something like that. But when you go out of your way to spend, you know, money on some shit where I hate you, and then the guy goes personal on you, and the next thing that happens is your girl who, this dude is known for going too far. I mean, I like Jeez, but he's known for going too far. So if you're the one fucking paying the most attention to him in the entire crowd, do you think he's not going to go too far on you?
Right,
fact of
right.
the matter is, I would bet on that. I would play those lottery numbers.
Yeah, but he's trying to make himself, you know, he's trying to do his thing, you know.
Right,
that's his,
of course.
That's
but,
his gimmick, you know what I mean?
Right, and you're making him feel like he's definitely over. If you decide that you're so butthurt over your efforts to draw attention to yourself, now he's fucking with you and getting personal, yeah, well, this was funny, but it wasn't funny when he struck back. Well, you're dead wrong, dude. That's funny to me, because it ain't me, because I ain't the one who's going to buy a t-shirt, a banner, or any of that shit. And like I said, yo, fucking, I'm cool with you. I ain't got no fucking problem with you in the same token. Whatever, dude. I can't understand where someone put themselves in the line of fire, and when they get fired at, anybody who is watching, you're going to start swinging at them. You're going to start catching offense to anybody who is watching what you made happen. Come on, dude.
Right.
Come on. For real, dude. There was a good amount of time where I didn't like fucking Sabian either. And then I realized what he was doing, and that's why I like him now. But the whole time I didn't like him, I didn't clap. I didn't boo. I fucking sat there with my arms folded. And the most he could do is shoot me a look. You know why? Because I didn't feed into it. And if I ever seen anybody feed into anything, you guys are in the fucking dictionary under that shit. So, and typing a public novel about the shit, when there could have been that same email sent to DJ Hyde, there could have been that same email sent to Maven, sent to everybody privately. Yo, the fucking CZW fans forum, who I'm not a fucking fan of at all, I don't like these motherfuckers at all. Do you think if you posted that fucking shit on the CZW fans forum, even though they hate Sabian, they wouldn't treat you like a piece of shit for typing that much about another human being? And that doesn't make them right. But
right,
the
right.
fact of the matter is, when you post something publicly like that, if a few people laugh at you, it's your fault for posting it publicly. You can't go on the fucking defensive and really start getting fucking upset about shit, because nobody did that shit. Nobody went into your personal life and drug shit out before you went on a fucking diatribe about fucking what you don't like.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's what it is. I mean, you can go right now, you can post 5 paragraphs on how you hate Pepsi on Facebook. I guarantee you get like 5-10 motherfuckers that call you a faggot for it. They might not even be against Pepsi. They might not even be with Pepsi. But
right.
the fact of the matter is, they're going to look at it and be like, that's a lot of fucking words for fucking something that you don't like, motherfucker. What the fuck is going on here?
Right.
It's just, I understand people's points. I understand a dude goes too far. But, I mean, there's a time and place. And when that shit goes that far to the point where you're going to only egg it on, now you're going to hate on other people to laugh at it. Sorry, dude. I'm not down with it. And I mean, if you really think that I'm the target, see me, man. But I really, that's not my agenda to just run around fucking dealing with people like that. Because I go to wrestling for my entertainment. But I don't feel that there's a fucked up thing that could happen to me over this. So, you know, much love, and you know, I hope you keep supporting the product, and you know, I hope, you know, you're able to fucking endure all of this and just, yeah, like you said, walk out of a match, go out there. Yeah, I know it's sad that I talk about wrestling for as much time as I do instead of just, like, buying things such as, you know, T-shirts and banners. I should probably do that. Nicole, sorry for bringing it up. It's all good, Nicole. Yo, believe me, I had this shit boiling. Since last night. Like, I thought some shit was gonna go down at the next fucking
See,
show.
Nobody and... tell you don't tell me nothing. This is news to me.
Did I read your butt? What are you talking about? What's news? What?
No, the whole thing with you and, you know, your little built-up, you know, anger is news to me, like...
Well, yeah, because I haven't really talked to you about a lot this week, but either way, like, it was some shit, like, dude, like, straight call me out and shit. And it shocked the shit out of me, and he didn't even call me out on some shit. Like, hey, I didn't like what you said on the show, but, like, I got called out for making fun of the situation on the show when Jeez was on a couple weeks ago with fucking Drew, and I brought that shit up. Somebody told him about it, and then he listened to the show, and his ass hurt. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, fuck it. You know what I mean? So, fuck it. That was a real deal. You know what I mean? That was what happened. If you want to do some shit, take it up with fucking Jeez, because he's your fucking problem. If other people think it's funny, you know, bow your head, dude, because first off, ain't nothing happening over here. But I'll be there in August, and like I said, I don't got no problems with people. I'm not the fucking problem. I'm someone who thinks it's humorous, and if you don't want to be humorous, stop making it public, dude. Period. I didn't find you humorous about your entire life until you made a spectacle out of yourself. If you want to make a spectacle out of yourself, go right the fuck ahead. Don't make me fucking the target because all of a sudden I'm laughing. I mean, there's a lot of motherfuckers laughing. Motherfucking, let me tell you something. Yeah, sorry, Paul, but your boy fucking Paul, and my boy Paul, who put you on to the fucking show, said he felt the same fucking way but didn't say it. So the fact that I said it, don't catch fucking feelings, man. There's a lot of people that feel the same way. I'm only the dude that had the balls to say it. You know what I mean? And again, I ain't the one with a fucking problem. So, anyway, do we got some more shit to talk about? Because I'm just bugging out now because I had that chip on my shoulder because I've been dealing with this for two nights while I can't see a picture on my fucking computer, but I'm getting these fucking crazy-ass messages. I can read text, so I get these crazy-ass messages about all of this shit and how it's fucked up and people are disappointed that I try to make a joke out of something that they were really concerned
about.
I
don't see any of this in the chat room. All I see is the last thing I see, it was from 9:44. My switchboard keeps going.
Open up the other chat room where it's in black. Thank you, Nicole. Yeah, you're great. I'm so glad to have you back. And we did congratulate you beforehand.
Definitely.
But being that this is the first you've been back to the show, I'd like to very much again congratulate Nicole Klein for the first time, officially Miss Insanity, on her nuptials to Mr. Insanity, Toby Klein. And very, very happy for you guys. I've said it on probably every show that you've been gone. However, very happy for you guys. Congratulations.
I hope this fucking chat thing.
If you go over that little chat room and then you click the open the chat room in another window, it'll open like a black window.
I don't want to kick you out. Oh, okay.
See it all. I haven't commented on there, but I could see it all. Anyway, what else have you got? I'm looking forward to the NFL. Obviously, I've caught heat over past shows. I don't give a shit. And, like I said, sorry if I hurt somebody's feelings, but however I'm going to feel how I feel is really not something that I'm stressing over or I'm fucking dying.
I don't really got nothing. I mean, we talked about a lot of shit. Tonight, I'm fucking... I'm getting tired. It's been a long day today, man. Fucking working, standing up at 6:30 this morning, and fucking heat.
Yeah,
I know I'm gonna catch some heat. Well, hey, you know, imagine dealing with kids all day. You know.
The what?
I said I don't want to catch no heat off of, and I know that's to be the next thing I hear is, well, you don't have to deal with kids. So, you know what I'm saying?
You know.
I don't like the cut of your jib, fella.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think we need to get a fucking T-shirt made. Honestly, like, I don't like what Sabian's saying. So I think...
Wait,
no,
you
I
get a T-shirt made?
No, I think we need to get a T-shirt made for DJ.
He's a jackass.
I have one. I mean, it says, like...
Well, the jerk store called. They're running out of you.
Will that work? Because I already got that one. I don't want to pay for it again.
Okay.
All right. You know?
Works for me.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just rock that one. But, you know, I think more or less, pretty much done. I don't want to stretch this any further than it needs to go. I'll probably play a few outro-type things for you guys to enjoy. And, you know, other than that, Eric, we're good, right?
Yep.
Well, we'll check you out next Thursday on Yakuza Kick Radio, 9 p.m. Bork Williams, I am J-Cat Morris. We'll holla at you motherfuckers every week. Next week, especially. Peace.
This is my first attempt at a eHarmony video. I'm nervous, but I'm excited at the same time. So I'm just going to start talking about what I like. I love cats. I love every kind of cat. I just want to hug all of them, but I can't hug every cat. So anyway, I am a cat lover and I love to run. I'm sorry I'm being a bad cat. I guess I really love a cat. I'm thinking about cats again and again and again and again and again. I think about how many don't have a home and how I didn't have some. I think about how cute they are, and how their ears, and the whisker in their nose. I just want them, and I want them, and I want them in a baggie, and I want little bow ties. I just want them, and I want them to be on a rainbow, and in my bed, and I just want them to roll around, to roll around, round, round, round. Sorry, I'm getting emotional. I love cats. I love every kind of cat. I just want to hug all of them, but I can't hug every cat. Can't hug every cat. So anyway, I am a cat lover and I love to run. I'm sorry I'm being a bad cat. I guess I really love all cats. But I can't hug every cat. Can't hug every cat. Can't hug every cat.
But you go to the back, and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town, and it's Yakuza Kick Radio, and we're taking over.
We're taking over. We're taking over.